Well, welcome everybody, and thank you so much for joining me on this first live chat seminar. My name is Sue Larkey, and my aim in the next 45 minutes is to give you lots of practical ideas. I call myself a pracademic, which is a practical academic, and although tonight's going to be lots of practical strategies, a lot of the stuff I'm talking about does come from my research from my master's and my doctorate of education. I'm hoping tonight, in the next 45 minutes, you'll all take away three ideas from this call. I want you to get the most out of this call tonight because I know many of you would have had to, in Australia, those of you watching MasterChef are giving that up, and from all over the world, I know some of you had to stay up in New Zealand till quite late, and other parts of the globe, getting synced to Sydney time is always a challenge. So I'd ask that you at least hopefully have printed out your handout. And I'd recommend you grab a highlighter, pens, texters, whatever, so you can scribble all over that and take notes as I discuss the strategies. After the call, I'll be online on Facebook to take your questions and for people to discuss key points together. I often find other people have great ideas to share too, so I look forward to you all participating in that part of this evening. If you haven't already asked to be my friend on Facebook, if you do that now, then I can friend you and you're set to start engaging. So let's move on to our live chat. My those of you with a handout in front of you see there's 10 key strategies for success at home and school that I want to discuss tonight. Of course, there's a lot more that I would love to discuss, but I think 45 minutes is more than enough listening. The first key strategy is that ASD is individual. Now, I know a number of you listening tonight are awaiting diagnosis, maybe have a diagnosis of PDD, NOS, or other groups of disabilities as well. And I guess I'm going to say that it doesn't matter which label, a lot of these strategies apply. And at the end of the day, every child is individual. Just like if you went into any classroom and there were 30 students, each of those students are individual. And when we teach children with autism spectrum, we have to be particularly aware of this because one strategy might work extremely well for one child and then you meet another child on the spectrum and that same strategy mightn't work. And one of my favourite sayings is to know someone with autism spectrum disorder is not to know autism spectrum disorder. It's to know that individual child. The next thing about being individual is that not every strategy works for everybody, in that each child needs very different strategies through different ages and stages. But then tonight, you might think, hang on, Sue, but you're saying these strategies work for all ages. They do, and I'll talk more about that later. But the third point I want to make under individual is that strategies wear out, and often a strategy will work for a while, and it'll stop working. And for those of you that know girls on the spectrum, we often see with girls on the spectrum, we see improvement, and then regression, which, I mean, it sounds like I don't really like the word regression, but we often see the girl move forward and then she'll take some steps back. And I often find we need to change our strategies in those times and then maybe go back to the strategies that were working earlier. But as much as I say that to know someone with autism spectrum is not to know autism spectrum, strategies wear out and not every strategy works for everybody. The amazing thing is I find the same strategies work no matter where on the spectrum. So whether you have a child who is passive, so they mightn't show their anxiety in the same way as a child who's highly anxious and shows that through big meltdowns, a lot of our passive children don't have big meltdowns at all. In fact, just this week I had an email from a parent whose child didn't get a diagnosis because the psychologist said, oh, he doesn't have meltdowns, then he's not ASD. But that's not my experience. Many of the children I work with are quite passive. But that child still needs in place many of the strategies that I'll be talking about this evening, as much as a child who we might call active. Just like a child in a wheelchair needs a ramp for access, no matter what age, kids on the spectrum, whether autism, Asperger's, 3 years old, 13-year-old, or 83-year-old, all need the same key strategies in place. And that's what I'll be discussing throughout the rest of the seminar. For me, I've worked with nearly 2,000 people on the spectrum, and I've found over the years that the general same things need to be taken into account, and they're the key strategies I'm going through this evening. But also they need to be adapted to the individual child, individual family, individual situation. And I've had emails coming through tonight that, you know, talk about what about the other siblings and the family. And it's the same in the classroom, you know, often what about the other children? And when I've worked in specialist schools, often you'll have two children with ASD in the same class who actually clash. And you might need to put in place different strategies because you've got two very different needs there. So let's move on to really our key first strategy, which is rewarding and motivating. All of us need rewarding and motivating. But when we work with children with autism spectrum, often in the classroom particularly and the home as well, the rewards need to be more obvious and they need to be more structured. You know, you will see in a neurotypical classroom, I hate that word, but normal classroom, where a teacher might say to the class, "Oh, look how nicely Sue's sitting up." And the rest of the class will all sit up like Sue, knowing the teacher's meaning, "Oh, I'm very happy when everyone sits like that." But if you had a child with autism or Asperger's in the class, they wouldn't understand that social cue necessarily. They might just look at the child sitting up and be so literal that they'll look and go, "No, no, they're not sitting up that nicely." But they mightn't necessarily understand that to make the teacher happy, why they do things. And that's why we use social stories, of course. But going back to rewards and motivating, I think we need to use a range of strategies. And in my experience, you need to make sure that children on the spectrum get a lot of rewards throughout the day. And I like small achievable tasks, small achievable reward. So let's take at school, we might say to a child, when you've written three sentences, you can have 5 minutes drawing your favourite Pokemon. Or we might say to a child, in preschool, once you've done the puzzle, you know, when you've done the puzzle, then you can do your favourite drawing. So you can balance it like this. So the first type of motivation that I use is often tokens, which if you have a look in your handout, if you turn to page 4, you'll see the little token reward systems there. And these are fantastic because they're just counters that you move across on Velcro and you can make your own. And those of you who have the tips for toileting book and the practical communication book, there's actually a template in there to make up your own like this. So I've got a little boy at the moment, Jack, who we're working on him. It's a really interesting one actually, because Jack puts up his hand in class and if the teacher doesn't call on him, he gets really upset and will often cry because he put up his hand and the teacher didn't see him. Now, other children know that there's lots of children in the class and the teacher mightn't see them. But for him, if he's got an answer, he really wants to share. So what we do for him is every time he puts up his hand and the teacher doesn't answer him, we move the token across, which is acknowledging he had his hand up, rewarding him for not getting upset, so help teaching him to manage his own anxiety. And then when he's got 5 tokens, he gets 5 minutes on his favourite activity, which is building Lego. So we then use the time timer, which I know many of you know, which is on that same page, you'll see those lovely time timers. I've actually got my time timer on the desk in front of me here this evening to help me know my 45-minute limit. And so for him, we put the timer on for 5 minutes, and when the 5 minutes is up, then he goes back to starting again with those 5 token rewards. Now, for him, what makes this really work is expectations are clear. It's a visual system. He doesn't have to rely on the teacher looking to him to say if he's recognised him or seen him, the actual token moving across. And this, I must say, is where it's hard on the telephone, because if you could see me demonstrating that, it would probably be a little bit easier to understand. But then we also, for using our motivation, we have kids where we use activities as motivators. So, you know, the writing 3 sentences, then a reward, or do the puzzle, then a reward. What do you use to motivate these kids? And I think this is something a lot of people struggle with. And often when I go into schools, people go, "Oh, but what about the other kids? You know, what about this kid's on the computer or playing with Lego? You know, they should just be motivated by everyone else the same." But it doesn't work like that for kids on the spectrum. I think we really do need to use their special interests. And just last week I was hosting Tony Atwood in Campbelltown and in Melbourne. I know many of you were there. And one of the things Tony talks about is their special interests. And I think we need to really understand and nearly respect their special interests. For me, the thing about their special interest, it's the thing that keeps them calm. So allowing Jack to play with Lego for 5 minutes is also a preventative break. By him having little bits of time with Lego throughout the day actually allows him calming. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if some of you are sitting there going, but Sue, how do I get him back off the Lego, back to the task? Well, my experience is that they need to know they're going to go back and do the Lego, that it's not days away. You know, I recently had a boy whose mum said if he handed all his homework in secondary, he could have a lunch order on Friday. Friday's just too far away. He needs a dollar each day probably to really make it work. So the same with Jack, that he does 5 minutes on his Lego and then he knows what he has to do, get the 5 tokens to go back there again. But the key is to make it very achievable. So back to their special interests. How do you recognise what their special interests and motivates them? Well, there's a couple of key things I think are really handy. First, observe what they do when they're left alone. Some of my kids, it would be sensory. I've got a young boy, Matthew, who just likes pacing around the classroom. So we use that to motivate him. When he's done his handwriting, which he finds very frustrating, he's allowed to get up and wander around the classroom for 5 minutes. And again, we use the time timer and he self-regulates that. In fact, it's fantastic. And he was wandering more before when he had no boundaries and no time, whereas now he knows what he's meant to be doing. The other thing which Wendy Lawson taught me, who has autism, and Wendy's a fabulous advocate and calls autism spectrum a disability, not a disability, and I just think that's a wonderful term. What Wendy says is give these kids a camera and see what they take photos of. And a month or so ago, I was doing a workshop and a mum came up to me after I said that and showed me her iPhone, which had 140 photos of Toy Story 3, the cover, just the cover of the Toy Story 3. So it's pretty obvious what her son's special interest is. So I would really identify their special interest and then create some rules and boundaries around it. Now, for the parents listening, I think that is the hardest thing for you often to establish, because often this is when your child's happiest, they're happiest, watching Toy Story 3 nonstop. But the problem is there's no rules or boundaries. So they need to know when they've had a bath, then they can watch Toy Story. When they've had dinner, then they can watch Toy Story. So creating some built-in rewards around those things, not just watching Toy Story nonstop all weekend. The other thing we use to motivate and reward kids is sensory. So over the years, I've had a lot of kids who allowing them time with their sensory interests, whether it's a little tent, listening to music, playing with their little collection of leaves or things they like to fidget with. This really helps many of our kids. And the final way I use rewards is really time. So at school, my general rule for many of my kids assisted with Asperger's, 25 minutes work, 5 minute reward. 25 minute work, 5 minute reward. And home, the reverse. 25 minute reward time, so playing on their favourite computer game, 5 minutes doing homework or 5 minutes doing an activity the parents choose. So you're balancing that 25 minutes their time on the trampoline, 5 minutes doing something you want. I think if you build up those routines and expectations, then the reward's built in to your everyday routines and it makes it so much easier. The third strategy is structure and adaptions. Now, we put these in place to increase independence. So whether it is a pencil grip, which you'll see the fabulous pencil grips that I love on page 4, where there's the fantastic pencil grips that you can put in place. So you could spend hours showing a child how to hold a pencil and telling them to hold a pencil properly. Or you can put a pencil grip on that actually puts their fingering in place. And you'll see also there the chew sticks for the ends of the pencils, where many of our kids chew their pens and pencils, which is an oral sensory thing. And many of our kids, to relieve anxiety, actually chew their pens and pencils. But if we put on top those textured toppers or the little star and trains, what that does is give them something appropriate to chew. Because otherwise, what happens is they chew their hat string, their collar, or they chew their pen and pencil to the point that they nearly can't use it because it's got so much dribble and so forth on it. But the other sorts of structures and adaptions that I find helpful is a set spot on the mat so they know when it's mat time where to sit. for some of my kids having set partners, because when the teacher says find a partner, they often don't have anyone, and that can cause anxiety and meltdowns. A set partner in the line, because again, they can often be missed out, and for Asperger's kids, if they're left out, that causes a huge amount of anxiety. And just on that, for the teachers listening, which I know there's a number of you, look, we just have to be really, really cautious. A lot of our Asperger's kids, they do what we call a veneer of coping, where the teacher says find a partner, or you allow them to choose teams, and the kids choose the teams, and the Asperger's kid's left to last. And the Asperger's kid mightn't show any outward anxiety or worry about this at the time. In fact, they go to the group and they play the game and you don't see anything. But when they get home, they absolutely have a huge meltdown about the fact they didn't have a partner, they were left to last to be picked in a team. And we call this a veneer of coping. And in fact, I'm hoping we can get Dr. Richard Eisenmeyer on one of these calls to actually talk more about this. But look, for many of our kids, they do hold it together at school and then go home and all the anxiety of the day comes up. It often might end up in a meltdown as soon as they get picked up, or sometimes not sleeping and being up all night reliving mistakes or things that happen during the day. And we really do need to work between home and school to try and work out the triggers and anxiety for these kids. And particularly for the families listening, I know it can be awful going to the school and saying, he's, you know, at home he's like this, and the school says, oh no, we don't see any of that. But many of you listening would have had a job where you smiled sweetly at your boss, where you said yes, yes, and did what they said, and went home and got upset or complained to your friends. And I think for many of our kids with ASD, that's what it's like. They know at school they need to sort of hold it together, and then they get home and it all falls apart. So I just wanted to remind you about that tonight. Back to structures and adaptions. At home, I really think the big adaptions around homework. Homework is a huge stress for many families. And look, I agree with Tony Atwood that in many cases, homework doesn't serve a purpose for our kids. And if you jump on his website or look in either of his books, if you don't know his books, they're on page 2, I think. She says, no, they're on page 3. So Tony's 2 books. For those of you that are new to Asperger's, I'd highly recommend his first book, which is the A Guide for Parents and Professionals. And excellent, just helping you understand what diagnosis is. And often find two in families, often there'll be a parent that understands Asperger's and quite comfortable, but maybe the partner or extended family really struggle to understand what Asperger's is. And I find that book a very easy read. If you look across, you'll see The Complete Guide to Asperger's, the one with the shells on the front, and many of you will know that book. Look, that book is called The Complete Guide. I could tell Tony you should have called it The Complex Guide. That Complex Guide has, like many of you who are on the line who might have a kid with PDD or Tourette's and ASD or ADHD and ASD or kids on medication and so forth, that book really covers those more complex issues, puberty, sexuality. So I would say the earlier years, that first book's fabulous, but for older kids, I'd really point you towards The Complete Guide. Now, the reason I like both those books, as a teacher, they're reassuring I'm on the right track. They're reassuring that, yes, this is part of AS, this isn't unusual. A couple of years ago, I had a girl who stopped eating, straight away looked in The Complete Guide, and yes, guess what, Tony talked about that. And The Complete Guide also, for those of you that are facing bullying or issues like that, that's the book I'd look in for that sort of information. But back to homework, in The Complete Guide, Tony's got some information on why homework isn't always relevant for our kids and causes more anxiety than it's worth. But look, if you are going to do homework, I recommend you put in place some really clear adaptions. So the first thing would be to have the desk all set up when they get home from school. Have a drink, because many of our kids who are highly anxious, they drink more fluid. I've got my fluid on the desk tonight. Many of you look around, you've probably got yours there. But some of these kids forget to drink. So having a drink there, highly recommend food snacks. So most kids on the spectrum love barbecue shapes. I'd have my barbecue shapes out, ready, so it's there when they come home. They don't have to then wander off or say they're hungry and get distracted. So straight away, they've got their snack, their drink. And then I would have my time timer. And I would say to the school, how long is realistic for a year one to do spelling words? 15 minutes? Okay. And then be, you know, focus for your 15 minutes. This is how far we got. So maybe 8 words is realistic. And just, you know, let the school know, well, this is how much we got done. And then you can create that. So you're adapting the task to the time limit. And I think this is really, really important. The other thing I'd make sure is I've got the page ruled up, the pencil already sharp, all equipment out ready to go in a set place. I do find for some of my kids having music or ear things for them to pop in their ears to block out siblings and so forth can be really helpful, and also some sensory tools. So I must say on my desk tonight, I was a little bit nervous about this call. I had my little wooden massager, which I've picked up now, but you all would have different things. But I find that the little wooden massager is just fantastic, particularly for my older kids, because they really can keep that in their pocket at school, and it's a very subtle little sensory tool. But even as I'm talking tonight, many of you will notice yourself, you're fidgeting with things or drawing. I'd be interested, actually, if we had a Skype camera to see how many of you have drawn on things or coloured things in. And that's all, we all do that, and kids on the spectrum particularly like to do those things. Number 4 is routines. And the main reason we have in place routines for kids on the spectrum is to reduce anxiety. I find the more routines, the less anxiety. So having a set routine, whether they're 3-year-old or 13-year-old or 33-year-old, is really, really important. And I find where I need routines the most is during change or transition. So movement from home to school, from school back to home, between classrooms, they're the main times. Or if there's a change, that's when we need routines in place. Now, there was a question earlier about going to school and transport and so forth on Facebook. And look, I couldn't agree more. That first thing in the morning routine and the coming home, those transition times, is where we need routines in place. But I also find often that is where, we're going to come to this in a minute, but where we don't use as many visuals as we should, that often when a child goes on a bus to school, the bus staff don't have visuals, you know, and they should have visuals on the bus. There should be a schedule or a clock or timer that tells these kids what's going on. You know, we often in those times don't have in place our other routines. But think of yourself tonight. Think of what changed for you to go on this call. Were you a bit anxious getting on time? Were there routines that you normally do? Were there TV shows you normally watch? You know, and I'm sure, you know, if you think of yourself tomorrow morning, or for Australia, but for those of you who have a coffee in the morning, imagine if you normally have a white cup of coffee and someone makes you a sugared tea. Will that change your routine? How do you feel about it? Will you have it? Well, one of the ones I was thinking about is, you know, when you park your car in your own driveway or garage, do you park your car the same way all the time? Well, tomorrow, how about try reversing it in? Or if you normally go in front, if you normally reverse and going forward, it'd be interesting to see how you feel about that change in routine. And the next time you go to get in the car, do you go to get in the wrong side? Things like that. So I think we all put in place routines because it makes life easier. And kids on the spectrum, the more routines, the calmer and happier they are. Visuals is number 5. And look, I think we all know about visuals. I'm not going to talk too much about visuals tonight, but I just want to remind you that visuals aren't to replace speech, and that visuals are just to prompt and help children, and that children on the spectrum are visual learners. And the main reason that we use visuals is that 80% of parents of kids with autism spectrum actually went for a hearing test when they were very little. That was sort of the first thing that they went, But yet, we know these kids often have acute hearing, that often something banging or another noise will, they'll notice things. So what we know is this, that when you go for a hearing test, it's just a sound that just goes beep, beep, which tests your ability to respond to sound, not your ability to process sound. So children on the spectrum often, yes, they respond to sound, very much so, but their ability to process sound is what's very tricky for them. So therefore, when you speak to them, often they need longer to process, but also they often don't understand what you're saying, so you need to shorten how many words you use and use a visual system. Now, for me, there's a range of great visual systems around, and many of you will know BoardMaker. Unfortunately, BoardMaker in Australia, it's about $800-$900. So I recommend you look at something like Pigs for Pets, which is on page 4. The reason I like Pigs for Pets, it's only $55, it's 2,000 symbols. If you get on the internet and start scouring for pictures on Google Image, which is a really, you know, good way to do it, but the pictures haven't actually been tested for children with autism, and often if your picture's blurry or not a great picture, that it's not really ideal, and you can spend a lot of time looking for pictures and not actually finding effective visuals, whereas things like Pigs for Pets and BoardMaker, and there's some great new apps coming out for the iPad and iPhone. Look, I think they're already made, saves you a lot of time, and you know, my doctorate research says that most teachers and parents really struggle to have the time to do a lot of these strategies. We know what we should be doing, but finding the time can be really, really tricky. So look, things like Pigs for Pets are great for that, and there is some fantastic free websites with visuals on them. You know, get on those where they're already made up. I highly recommend that, and I normally put those in my newsletter, and make sure you sign up for my e-zine, and I'll have some of those in my e-zine. Just on visuals though, one of the things I would recommend, particularly the girls, when you're making visuals, don't put them on white paper. Many of our kids, and Wendy Lawson wears the Erlen lenses, many of our kids actually are better off with things actually photocopied on pink or blue paper, the light coloured paper, the light blue and light pink. And look, give it a try. Just see if the child responds better. And even worksheets, I'll photocopy on those colours and find that the child can actually see that better. So again, that's part of their sensory processing difficulty and often their visual processing. So don't just assume because you've given them a picture, they see what you see. Now, number 6 is social. And quite honestly, I could probably do a whole phone call on social. But I just really wanted to point out for social that for many of the kids that I know and work with, that the playground is the most stressful part of their day. And in the early years, that they often don't want to be out with 30 kids running around, and in primary schools, often, you know, hundreds of kids. And by secondary, I'm sure many of you listening remember secondary school, how confusing the peer group is. And secondary can be very, very tricky for these kids in the playground. And in fact, some of the kids I support, that they don't go out in the playground. They're better off in the library doing homework or joining clubs. But the playground, depending on the school, can be extremely difficult place. And I often ask myself, when was the last time you guys went out in the playground with 800 kids? You know, is that a life skill? Is that really what's important? So I guess we need to put in place strategies around social, and I strongly believe we have to work on social. I'm not saying that I want this child in the library isolated. Far from that. I would much rather we're setting up passive playgrounds, which are really big in New South Wales now. I know many of you listening would be aware of, we have a range of names for them throughout Australia, but where a classroom's open with Lego, board games out. I've got one school that's got a whole lot of ASD kids who love Pokemon cards, who take their Pokemon cards in for swapping. But it's more closely supervised than a huge, huge playground where often these things can escalate, whereas a passive playground or a classroom that's open can really create just that little bit more structure that these kids need. But with social, I think we have to continue working on it. It needs to be 10 minutes a day, that we need to not just do it once a week, that we need to have a range of strategies. And a big part of social skills is also helping children understand emotions and helping them understand other kids' emotions. You know, reading body language, understanding tone of voice. And, you know, parents driving to school tomorrow morning, you know, say a sentence in a different tone of voice. See if your child knows what emotion that is. That can be really, really hard for many of our kids. And I know kids where the teacher tells off one child, who's another child in the class, and the Asperger's child will burst into tears thinking they're in trouble. So, you know, it is very important that we build up their social understanding. And social stories are fabulous for that, and there's quite a few resources here that I'd recommend for social stories. But what I did yesterday, because I thought, oh my goodness, there's so much stuff here that I could actually talk on social. If you actually jump on YouTube, I've uploaded a video on teaching social skills. So if you just put in Sue Larkey, S-U-E, Larkey, and you'll see there's a YouTube on teaching social skills. So the next one, number seven, is time to process. I'm sure many of you tonight listening here, it's a huge amount of information to process. But for kids on the spectrum, when there's a lot of verbal instruction, they don't hear things, and that's where don't process information. So a lot of our kids need time to process. So I would encourage you to, particularly if you're using things like interactive whiteboards, to print things out. Parents at home, when you're giving instructions in the morning to get ready for school, I'd recommend you create a visual schedule, you know, hat, bag, toilet, clean teeth, whatever needs to be done, rather than constantly verbally reminding them what they need to be doing. But I saw a great thing just this week that I thought was really, really fabulous. After we're going to schools, there's so much stuff hanging around classrooms, like it might be frequency words or information up that kids need to how to do handwriting, or you know, if you're putting posters up the kids are meant to refer to, really our kids need that information in their own folder on their desk, because to be able to look up, look at that information and then look down and recall it, the processing involved in that is huge for many of our kids. So they really should have their own alphabet chart, their own frequency words. You know, if you've got things up in the room kids are meant to constantly refer to, I'd recommend they have a copy of those on their desks. And it's funny because I was thinking of a number of kids I know who actually get up all the time and wander around the room. But a lot of the time they're going to look at these things that are meant to be there to be referred to that other kids can do from sitting in their chair and look up and refer to. But for this kid, they actually need to move over to it. And I noticed someone put a question on earlier this evening about peripheral vision. And for many of my kids who use peripheral vision, they would need to get right up close and look side on at that poster or information. That trying to look at it from a distance would be really hard for them. So time to process, just a reminder about that. When I work with children with autism, and for families listening, if I'm working with a young child, 3 or 4 with autism, I allow at least a minute to process between instructions. So if you want to say, you know, sit on a chair, you wouldn't just say, you know, Sue, sit on the chair, and then straight away say again, Sue, sit on the chair. You'd actually need to count to at least 20 before you repeat that sentence. But that's really why we use visuals to back up our verbal information for those kids, or even a visual of pointing to the chair would make a big difference. Number 8 is repetition and practice. Now, I know that's a logical one, but I think if we're all so busy that we forget that these kids need a lot of repetition. And schools used to do a huge amount of rote repetition and used to do lots of rote learning and repetition in learning. But, you know, I can go into a school on the same day every week and it's nearly a different timetable. And those of you in secondary often have 10-day rotating programs. And often within those subjects, it changes every day. And I think this is incredibly confusing for everyone, let alone the student on the spectrum. So I think repetition is very important. We're actually using their strengths. I mean, these kids love repetition. I have kids who love to talk every time I see them about dinosaurs. I have kids who love the same DVDs. I have kids who love to line up the same Unifix cubes over and over again. So they love repetition, and we need to use that love of repetition and provide opportunity for repetition. By providing repetition, we actually increase independence by letting them sit in the same spot every day in class. That is letting them be more independent. By letting them maybe be with the same partner for phys ed every week for, you know, 5 weeks, that repetition creates independence. So when the teacher says, okay, get the ball and, you know, find a partner, they know who their partner is. And that is very, very important for the kids that I know, because it reduces anxiety. And parents, think of where, you know, you have repetition in the morning, where they know on certain days that they're doing things, how much calmer they are. And I know that there's a number of you listening from America who have just gone on their 13-week huge break. I'm sure for many of your kids, you know, that lack of routine and repetition can be really hard for them. And, you know, creating those routines is really tricky. Now, number nine is sensory. Now, again, I think we might do a whole call on sensory at another time. But the hard part with sensory is we have some kids who are oversensitive and some kids are underreact. And I know Jessie, who said she'd be listening in tonight on Facebook earlier, said she was popping her child under their weighted blanket. So that's a child who loves deep pressure, who loves their weighted blankets. And I'm a big fan. I've got a lot of kids who love their weighted blankets. And teachers who are listening, obviously you don't need a weighted blanket, but a wheat bag can be fantastic to lie across a kid's legs. And I know there's some people listening from New Zealand tonight. And if you can get that nice black sand you guys have and put that in a hot water bottle or something, that's a very cheap way to make a weighted object to put across the child's legs. And this can be great for sitting at their desk or for sitting on the mat. Absolutely brilliant, having that weight. And many of our kids really calm with that weight on them. But other children can't stand touch. Other children, if you put that weight on them, they'd absolutely freak. I mean, I had one little boy who was incredibly sound sensitive years ago. And Carl, we wanted to put those headphones on him, but the weight of the headphones, he absolutely hated. Whereas now I have a lot of kids who we just use the little Hush Buddies, which still make, STIHL. If you haven't seen those, just Google still Hush Buddies. They are fantastic because the kids can actually pop these lovely light earphones in their ears, and they're not like these big heavy ones that we tried to get poor Kyle to wear years ago. That was just the weight of that big band going over his head that really annoyed him. He loved the actual earphones blocking the noise out. He ended up using his hands actually to do that. But for many of my kids, you will need to set up a sensory toolbox. So they actually need sensory tools for calming. And the way to work out what they need is look what they access anyway. Are they picking up bits of string? Are they chewing their collars? So if you look on page 4, you'll see a range of lovely sensory things that I use. Oh, the desk buddies are a bit hard there to see when I printed that out. But the desk buddies are all these lovely little textures. And what I do with them, I actually cut them up. And the kids can just have them in their pocket. Or some of my kids flip them. Things like the stretch dinosaurs for kids who love blue tack. So if you've got kids who are constantly seeking blue tack and taking all your posters off the wall, I would highly recommend those little dinosaurs. You can get little frogs. But often going to your $2 shop, you'll find things like that. Some of our kids who chew things, the chewy tubes are brilliant. Must say, I was a big pessimist of the old chewy tubes when I first saw them over sort of 10 years ago. But they're just fabulous. The stress balls for kids who like to pinch, particularly, and squeeze. And you'll see the kids who like to squeeze, and often the teacher aides, or angels as I call you, who are listening tonight, you know, you'll often have little bruises where this kid likes to do those pinches. But look, there's a range of things you can use. And most of the kids I support, I set up a sensory toolbox, which is just a lunchbox with their name on it. So it might say Ben's Sensory Tools. And in there, they will have a range of sensory tools that they can use for different reasons. And some of my kids will access them independently. Some of them I will have to remind them to use that. I have a little boy at the moment who we use the liquid timer for example, to help him calm himself after lunchtime. He's actually very good at soccer, runs around, has a wonderful time, but comes in red-faced, worked up, and allowing him to just sit and watch that liquid timer drip through for 3 minutes gets him calm, gets his heart rate down. It's nearly hypnotic. And then it's a preventative break because he can't listen. There is no point giving him any instructions until he has calmed after morning tea and lunch. And we're not going to stop him playing soccer. It's just fabulous to see him out there having a wonderful time. But we need to create a better transition from that environment into the classroom. And by giving him what we call a sensory break, that's a wonderful way to do that. Some of our kids are actual kinesthetic learners, or kinesthetic learners, which means they need fidget toys to help them to listen at the listening times. And the main time I use that are for long sitting listening times. That might be assembly, parents, that might be in the car, that might be when the grandparents come over and want to show all the photos from their holidays, that you might give this kid something in their hands to fidget with, because you know if they've got that, they won't constantly want to talk about their special interest or and will find it easier to listen. But look, there's more ideas on sensory and how to use those on my website. And look, there are heaps of tip sheets you can download on sensory. Oh, and I should have said that about social. I uploaded yesterday 3 tip sheets on social when I realised that I probably wasn't going to get through everything tonight. So if you go to www.suelarkey.com, which is where you would have gone to sign on for tonight anyway, you'll see that says tip sheets and newsletters, and there's probably too many tip sheets on there, but there's heaps of tip sheets you can download. And parents, I highly recommend that you do sort of drip feed teachers and take one in at a time, not take hundreds in all at the same time. But look, you know, they're the things that I think make a huge difference. And things like sensory breaks and preventative breaks for our kids are really, really important. And I'd encourage you to look at that. And the last one is persistence and consistency. And look, this is the most important thing. There is no point me putting in place a strategy and then there's no follow through between home and school. So I guess the best example of this, and I know a number of you tonight already have put on about toileting, and I think there is a tip sheet on my website on toileting, but I think Jo Atkins and I, who wrote the Tips for Toileting book, we will endeavour to run one of these in the next month or so and just focus on toileting, because it's an absolute passion of mine that kids on the spectrum get out of nappies at least by age 4 and 5. And Jo, having a son with autism, has been through the trials and tribulations of that. So look, the thing about toileting, for example, is it's no nappies, and it only takes one person to put the child in a nappy that they will hold. They will learn to hold till the nappy's put on. So I had a little girl who the taxi driver said, "No, no, when she gets picked up from school, we must have a nappy on her. We can't have her wetting the taxi." So as a result, she would hold all day at school. We'd take her every hour to the toilet. She would hold. As soon as the nappy was put on, she would do a wee and poo nearly before the taxi pulled up. But that shows she can actually hold. The thing is, we need to change that routine. She's learnt you wee or poo in a nappy. We need to change that thinking. But anyway, that's where you really need consistency and persistence. But really, if you look back through the strategies, whether it's rewarding and motivating the child, if a child is allowed to watch Toy Story 3 all day at home every day, and then suddenly, you know, at school they're expected to do work, it's very hard for a school to get a child to do work if at home there's no routines. But the same at home, if you're putting in place something for your child, some change in routine and wanting to get some change, and then at school there's no follow-through expectations. This is where we have to back each other up. But I guess one of the things I want you to take away from tonight is, or today, is that you've got to choose your battles. That's why you can't battle everything. So if you have decided that you are going to start using visuals for a child on the spectrum, it's very important if you make a visual at home that you photocopy it, make it and send it to school so school can follow you up. And school, if you make a visual, send it home. It's so much easier just to print it twice than then ask someone to make that visual. So this is where we need to support each other. But also we need to choose our battles, because if we put too much in place, we'll all be overwhelmed. And I think often the child then becomes overwhelmed. And the last thing I want you to really think about tonight and today is that if you're anxious, this kid picks up on your anxiety. So therefore, with persistence and consistency, one of the things when you're being consistent and following through is to ensure that you're calm, to ensure that you have actually clear about what you want to put in place, how that's going to look, and that you feel supported in doing that. And look, I know many of you sitting here going, "Sue, easier said than done." And look, I understand that. I really do. There are many kids who, you know, it can be exhausting, and you think you've got it all sorted, and then something happens that you think, okay, that didn't work. So I just want to thank you all for listening in this evening, and I hope that the 10 key strategies are a good place to start and that you've all got at least three things written down. I know many of you have my books, and just a reminder, there's hundreds more ideas in all my books. I mean, most of them have over 500 ideas in them. And I was hoping tonight, for some of you that haven't been to hear me speak in the last few years, or maybe never heard me speak before, it's just a reminder to grab my books back out again, because strategies wear out and not every strategy works for every kid. So maybe you need to revisit some of those things and look at what else you could be giving a try. I hope you've enjoyed the call. I must say I was extremely nervous with this new technology, but hopefully it's all gone well. We are hoping to have recorded this so you can re-listen to it at another time. And if that recording has turned out okay and the quality is okay, I will send that through to all of you who have signed up for the call in the next 24 hours, all being well on that. And I look forward to chatting to you all on Facebook now. I see a lot of things have come up while I've been chatting. It's actually been hard to read those while I was talking. I was hoping it'd be easier to do. And look, don't forget to download your free tip sheets on my website. And I look forward to having future calls like this in the future. Thank you.
The moderator has left the conference.